You're listening to Tech Thursday on West Limerick 102 FM.
Hello there, and you're very welcome to Tech Thursday. This is Patrick Sheehan. I'm going to be with you for the next hour or so, looking at all the latest in tech and answering any questions you might have. As always, you can call 069-66200, or you can text or WhatsApp 166-9800, and you can email patrick102fm@gmail.com, and any questions you might have, I can answer them on the next show. So starting off, I actually met a school teacher from one of the local schools, and he said that they were talking about setting up a podcast. He said they could be having up to four people maybe speaking at the same time and asking about how to record and different things like that, and that there would be, you know, certain budget restrictions and things like that. So I looked up a few articles, and I've been doing a little bit of research. So I found one article about from castos.com, and this is a few questions to ask yourself before purchasing podcast equipment. How serious am I about podcasting? Before you start buying equipment, is it important to evaluate your intentions? What are your goals of podcasting? Do you see this as a temporary hobby or intend to podcast like a serious business? Well, this is kind of in between, I suppose. It's not a serious business. It's not there for making money or whatever, but it is to, I suppose, represent the school and to put a good show together and give them an introduction into kind of the whole industry, which it is now, I suppose, of created self-created content, kind of thing like that. And it could be a good starting point for some of the students as well. So but there are budgetary constraints, so I presume there's no all and out, you know, building a massive studio and fitting it out with all professional equipment and everything. But there could be something fairly decent, I suppose. But what's the budget? This is the second question you should ask yourself, but it's arguably some of the most important. The amount of cash you have to spend on podcast equipment will likely determine the individual pieces you can buy. If your budget is small, you won't have much to consider. That said, keep in mind that small budgets are fine for podcasting. There's plenty of affordable products that sound great. Plenty of people start podcasting with just their laptop microphone. That's very true. You can get even USB microphones, you know, to start off with. Most people have headphones already, and a USB microphone, you can get like the Trust one or some One Audio do one, all for under like 20, 30 euro. You can get ones for, yeah, to get started, and they're pretty good, you know, and work up from there, you know. If you start seeing it more, taking it more seriously and things like that, you can upgrade afterwards. But it definitely is a good entry level, you know, to get into it price wise. So how many people will be recorded? Yes, that's true. The number of people who will be recorded on your show will affect the amount of equipment you will buy. If you're recording alone, you will just need one mic. An interview show needs two mics unless all your interviews are recorded remotely. A panel show, you would need as many mics as the number of people you expect to participate. Yeah, that's very true. Where will I record my podcast? Recording in a private recording studio is much different than recording in restaurants or busy convention centers. So this sounds like it'll probably be in one of the rooms in the school, something like that, and it probably won't be fully sound insulated and everything like that. So I'd probably, to start off with, microphone wise, if you're getting XLR microphones and not a USB microphone, I'd recommend to get say the standard plug-in microphones, dynamic microphones, because if you're not in a kind of a noise proof room, shall we say, the dynamic mic would be a lot less sensitive for picking up background noises and things like that. It's more of a directional mic where you're right in front of it and you speak straight into it, and it doesn't catch the outside sounds and noises, and there could be probably a computer in the room as well that it would be plugged into, so that would be making a bit of noise, and there'd be less of that picked up by a dynamic microphone rather than a condenser mic, which would kind of pick up everything. So that would be a good start microphone-wise anyway. Now, a lot of the USB microphones are actually condenser mics, so you could look around for that. But I don't think, unless you have, like, well, it is technically possible to use multiple USB microphones if you just plug them into different USB plugs and use kind of software to record multiple tracks and things like that. But I think the best way to go for multiple mics, rather than just a kind of a one-person podcast setup, which could get away with a single USB mic, multiple guests and things like that would probably need an external interface and maybe mixer interface in one like that, and with multiple mics, so you can plug in, you know, however is the size of the interface, is however many guests you can, however many plugs it has, inputs for microphones, XLR inputs and things like that, is how many guests you can have, that kind of thing. So you can get with up to 20 if you wanted, or you can get one with a single one, but usually it's 4 to 6, something like that, for an average size one. And we'll get into a bit of that in a while. Can I manage all the tech? You'll want to consider your comfort level with technology as well. If you struggle plugging tech together, installing drivers, configuring settings, it's possibly smart to stick with a simple entry-level option. Opt for USB plug-in, plug-and-play products wherever possible. But if you feel comfortable hooking multiple devices together, learning new systems and tweaking settings, especially in regards to audio tech, you should be fine with more advanced podcast equipment. Just make sure you understand each device before you purchase it. What I'd recommend here actually is definitely to use YouTube tutorials and things like that. It's very handy. You know, over the years I've often got stuck with something and trying to set it up and it wouldn't work, and I just watch a YouTube video on it, and it really helps a lot, you know. Also just Googling and finding different articles or on the product's own websites and things like that for tips, or read the instruction manuals if they come with them. But yeah, you can learn a lot as well on the go. You know, it says here understand everything before you get it, but not necessarily. If you think you'll be able to get on fairly well with it, you probably will, because if you get stuck, you can use a YouTube tutorial to so I wouldn't say that you should know the whole thing inside and out before you ever try it, but once you have a fairly good idea of hooking things up, and you know, if you set up a kind of a skybox or hooked up new TVs with different things, you know, once you're used to plugging things in, and it's all kind of common sense, it's routing, you know, if the input wire goes into the input in the mixer, then you know it's going into the microphone, and the output goes out into kind of an amplifier, or the USB out goes out into a computer, and you know, it kind of makes common sense, a lot of it anyway. So yeah, it can be done, just the settings then and things like that as well. And sound card settings can often be the most complicated part of setting up any of these kind of devices. So that, all right, you might need kind of a YouTube tutorial about. Will I be recording video as well? Some creators like to produce a video podcast just like regular podcasts, but you also capture a video of the hosts. You can upload the video directly to YouTube as it is, or you could edit some clips to make it more dynamic. This is an easy way to squeeze content out of your work. If you want video content as well, you need a camera, some lighting equipment, and a recording space that looks decent on camera. You don't need a complete podcast studio, but you just need a clean, non-distracting space. A simple movable room partition could be enough. So yeah, that, the teacher didn't mention that. I think it's purely audio that they will be recording, by the sounds of it anyway. It was all just podcasts they were mentioning, so. List of podcast equipment for beginners. Computer, an XLR or USB microphone. Mixer, if you have a USB microphone, you probably wouldn't need a mixer. And it sounds like the USB microphone kind of wouldn't be the right option for having up to 4 guests. It would be a lot to be plugging in 4 different USBs into a computer. Plus, I think they want to use headphones and things like that. So that probably wouldn't be an option. Pop filter or windscreen, yeah, that's always a good option. To put on in front of the microphones to stop the sound getting through. I'm using one right now as well. Headphones, and he was saying they wanted multiple headphones, so I had a bit of a look at different options there, and I wanted to try to find an option that would have multiple headphones. Acoustic treatments, recording and editing software, yeah, that's another one. You know, you have subscription ones like Adobe Audition, and you have free to use ones like Audacity and things like that, so there's lots of different options there. If you want to mix in music and things like that, you have the likes of Mixcraft is very good. And if you're using Apple products, then it's another story as well. You have all the Ableton and different ones with Apple as well. Podcast hosting provider is another one. So you'd be uploading on the likes of Anchor and things like that that can host podcasts. There's lots of different free ones and things like that, so it's not too bad. The computer is essential for podcasting because you'll want to use a digital audio workstation or DAW to produce your show. That means using a recording and editing software to make the final episode sound cleaner and more professional. Computer-wise, Mac or PC work just fine. Same for desktop or laptop. If you prefer one to the other, we should suggest using equipment you already know and use. One factor to be aware of is DAW software like Logic Pro and GarageBand only work on Apple products, but there are many options covered below in both operating systems. Yeah, there is. Yeah, so they're just recommending a few different PCs, but I think they already have PCs at the school. So XLR or USB. XLR podcasting microphones have three-pronged connection, are connected to a mixer and the computer, typically used in professional setups. And the mixer, so you have to be careful because there's like I use a Behringer mixer at home, and it's a 12-channel mixer, and it's a USB mixer. But there's an almost identical one without the USB. So, if you're going to be recording onto a computer for podcasting purposes, you have to make sure you get a USB mixer. But so you have XLR microphones, USB microphones connect directly to the computer via USB port, typically used for beginners who prefer an easy setup and less equipment. But even more advanced people nowadays, well, not I'd say more advanced, but more established podcasters are continuing with USB microphones. Maybe they're just not into tech, but I see a lot of them that are going for years and they're set up in their rooms, are connected up, you know, and they have even little studios and everything set up, and they're going for years, and they have like tens or hundreds of thousands of listeners, and they're still using you know, the likes of the Blue Yeti USB microphone. They're still using them. So people are going on with them nowadays because the sound quality is so good. Dynamic podcasting microphones, less sensitive to ambient noise, but can have less of a crisp and layered sound, typically used by beginner podcasters who require DIY studio spaces. Condenser podcasting microphones, more sensitive to high frequencies and environmental noise, typically used in recording studios with robust acoustic treatments. And you also have high-end dynamic microphones, which it doesn't mention here, like the likes of the Shure SM7B, which is a fairly expensive microphone, but it's a dynamic mic, but it's a very high-quality dynamic mic. I think famously Michael Jackson used it to record one of his, well, the SM7A, I think the original model was used, but they're over €400, so that would definitely break the budget for that the school has in mind. So this is some microphones that are recommended. Audio Technica ART 1200X, which is a dynamic mic. A condenser mic is the MXL 990 XLR, and then yeah, the Shure SM7B is the one I was talking about. That's probably the most famous podcasting microphone of all, the XLR one anyway. So yeah, I definitely would throw the likes of the Shure SM78 in there as well. I would also like the likes of the Blue Yeti microphone for a USB one, and the likes of One Audio have a more budget one as well if you're thinking about XLR or USB mics. But there's lots of different options there. There's Behringer ones and lots of different brands as well. Mixers are used to improve audio quality and offer multi-channel recordings. For those with co-hosts or guests, it's also required a piece for anyone using an XLR microphone. Adding a mixer to your podcast setup creates a new opportunity to record live episodes with AUX features. These recording sessions act similarly to Joe Rogan's setup, where he records everything in one go and adds music and sound effects during an interview. There's minimal, no post-production for the final cut. So this is the Yamaha MG10 or MG06. Yeah, they're very good. I've used one of those. A Focusrite Scarlett is another one. I've used those as well with multiple different channels. Mackie Pro FX V2, another one as well. Pop-up filter. So they're all the different types of mixers. And the main thing with the mixer is to make sure that you get you get a USB output, because you want to be able to plug. Now you can plug an audio output straight in through like a headphone jack, well, a microphone input or something like that into a computer or laptop, but you're better off use a USB connection for recording and things like that, because you can do multi-track recording and things like that. So say for example you're recording four different people on four different tracks, and suddenly one person is much louder than the others, or you didn't see it till later, and you all of a sudden you see one is on 50% volume and one is on 80% volume, and they stand out too loud. If that was all mixed down into one track, that person is just going to be louder than the others, because they could be talking over each other and things like that. Or you'd have to go in individually to the person and highlight the part where they speak, bring it down, highlight the part where they speak, and when they're speaking over each other or speaking together at the same time, you can't really do much with that. So what is very handy is when you have multi-track recording, you can just bring down the audio, and it's very important with music. You have to do it with music, you know, have multi-track recording, because instruments have to balance out with each other and things like that, and you often have to change it because they can the frequencies can clash, and where you end up not being able to hear one instrument, or it makes a bad sound. So that kind of adjustment needs to be made. So a USB connection to the computer is very good. Pop filter or windscreen, yeah. So there's lots of different screens that just go in front of your microphone to take some of the harsh sounds out of it, the breaths, and it kind of filters it a bit more. Foam to go over the microphone itself, yeah. Another thing, some people use both, some people use just one of them. Audiophonics pop filter, yeah. So this is just different pop filters and stuff. So Sony MDR7506. So this is some headphones they're recommending. Sennheiser HD280 Pro. So, but all these kind of equipment adding up would be definitely over their budget. So mount arms as well. So there's lots of different arms. The likes of, I've seen recently actually a fairly good Elgato one. It's a low profile one. So it's one, so most of the microphones, the ones we have here, there's the stands, the arms to hold them, start off and they go up high and then come down. This one starts off low and it just goes across the desk, and it goes up and then curves into you, so it's easy to move around. But I think it's a multi-joint arm. It can move in different directions. So some are just made to go in one kind of way. You have a little height adjustment and you can go left and right and all that, but they can't completely change. They can't go down low and tilt upwards instead. They have only a certain amount of degrees. But some of the more modern ones have much more flexibility. They can be higher, lower, anything. But so different arms. You want a good, sturdy, strong arm that doesn't make noise, and there's lots of different options for those nowadays. You have the likes of Elgato, and you have a newer boom mount, so this is a kind of a more budget one. Gator frame, and you just have a stand as well, a weighted stand, which is another option, but that might pick up a bit more sound. With one of those you'd probably have to use a dynamic mic as well. So acoustic treatments, recording in space purposely, so that's like putting noise sound deadening on in the room. Maybe if you have curtains up, a lot of people use curtains and things like that. It helps just to break up the sound. Do you ever notice if you take all the furniture out of a room, if you're clearing out a house or something like that, you find it so echoey all of a sudden, and that's the worst nightmare for recording audio. So just having things in the room, you know, having things to break up the sound, and curtains, or some people even just put like fabric onto the walls and things like that. Or if you can go fully professional and use the foam, the sound deadening foam on the walls and all, but that, you know, that could be expensive. But there's like paper mache kind of stuff you can put onto the walls, just to, that the sound won't bounce off of it. So yeah, but curtains is a good thing, a handy thing to do. Some people put curtains up on walls that don't have windows. They just put a large curtain going across a wall in a small room or something like that, you know, to cover the whole wall or a couple of walls, and it kills the sound from bouncing around and takes the echo out of it. So there's lots of different options, different foams and things like that. There's mini versions as well where you can get foam that just does a little semicircle around the back of the microphone, so when your voice is protected projecting out, it doesn't hit a wall and come back, it hits the foam and stays, you know, just it kills it. So video cameras, they're recommended if you want to add on a camera. I don't think they do, but the KickTech HD video camera camcorder, it's an easy, inexpensive option for capturing video and stills. It offers surprising quality for such a low price. It doesn't plug into your computer, so you'll need an SD card. Sony Alpha A600 mirrorless digital camera. It takes unbelievable photos and video. The output is nothing short of cinematic. You can plug it directly into your computer via HDMI to transfer clean, uncompressed files. Nikon Coolpix B500. The Nikon is a powerful mid-level camera that offers full HD recording and fun creative effects, or fun creative effects. The large LCD display makes it easy to compose your shots. You also have like the Zoom H8 camera, which is a kind of a podcast recording camera on its own if you wanted. So if you wanted a portable, there's a few options that way as well for mixers and things like that. You can have a camera that has two plugins, up to four actually. You can get a connector that goes onto it. So yeah, I think it's a Zoom H8. So it's a 720p camera. It wouldn't be the highest end camera, but it's rechargeable. It has a screen on it, and you can plug in two. It has two XLR plugs, and has, you can get an adapter to have up to four XLR plugs in it. So it can record four microphones at fairly high quality audio at the same time on the camera, which is very, very handy. So if you wanted a more portable option, that'd be another one. That could be plugged in and used that way as well. But I don't know if it can plug directly into a computer to have live audio. It definitely doesn't have multi-track audio directly out of it, but I think you can plug it in to have live audio to use it kind of as a mixer, but you don't have as much manual adjustments of, say, the lows and the highs and the mids and all that kind of stuff to adjust the audio. And for pure podcasting, especially just audio podcasting, it wouldn't be as necessary. So recording and editing software, so there's lots of options there. It depends on if you have Mac or PC as well, which ones we'll use. But you have Adobe Audition, you have Audacity, which would be a free one, and you have all the Mac versions there as well, which I mentioned earlier. So yeah, that's some options there. And I was looking at different kind of the, which might be in the price range, different options there. So on, you have different websites, you have like Thomann and Gear for Music, and you have the local shops as well. And to start off with, I suppose a kit is a good idea. And I was looking at a few different kits, the likes of the Zoom PodTrack and things like that, which would be a more portable device, and you can plug in up to four microphones in it and things like that. But it sounds like it's going to be a kind of a room setup, and it'll be more static, and to give you the most options possible for expansion and quality, and kind of without going over the budget. You know, I would normally recommend maybe the Rode Procaster, the studio recording. So that would be, you know, up to, I think, four microphones. But it also has Bluetooth, and it has, you know, when you push up, you can set it to, when you push up the fader to talk, it mutes the speakers, external speakers you might have connected and things like that, so you don't get feedback. And it's a very professional, it's almost like the studio here at the radio station set up from home, you know. But there is a more budget version of it, because that would be, alone would be up to or over 600 euro. You know, there's a new one out now, I think it's over 600 euro, so that would probably break your budget. But there's actually a kit here I've seen for 540 euro, which might be within the budget, and it's a full kit. So this is the Zoom LiveTrack L8 podcasting bundle for two people. Now, you might have more guests, but all you would need is to add on a couple of more microphones, maybe with stands and some XLRs. And they can be got pretty cheap. You know, you can get very cheap stands. You can get, I've seen a three pack of microphones for under like 40 euro, dynamic mics. And they would be good for not getting the background noise as well. But it would be a good base. I'd rather get a good mixer and a couple of microphones than get a cheaper mixer and four or five microphones. So this would be a good option. It has six inputs for microphones, which is very good. It has line outputs. It's a full USB. So this is, yeah, as I said, the Zoom Live Track L8 podcasting bundle for two people, but it's definitely expandable. So it includes dynamic mics, two pairs of headphones as well, and tabletop mic stands. So they're dynamic mics, so the tabletop stands should be okay as long as you don't move them around too much. I'd say to the students maybe to not put their hands on the stands and stuff if they can as much, because so it doesn't pick up the background noise. This would be a USB mixer as well, so you can plug in and you can record your multiple tracks. 8-channel digital mixer for podcasting and musicians. Takes calls and incorporates jingles live on air. So you have buttons there that you can assign to play different jingles and things like that. And for that, that Zoom Live Track L8, there would be lots of different YouTube tutorials and things like that. So 24-bit 96 kilohertz audio fidelity for crystal clear sound. So 12 in 4 out USB audio interface. So that means 4 out means when you plug your USB into the computer, you can record up to 4 separate tracks at the same time. But you can record more, but to have them separate tracks. If you record more than that, say if you use your 12 inputs, if you have instruments and microphones and everything plugged in, 12 inputs at the same time, it'll just record 4 tracks. So it'll put some of them into one track, it'll mix them into one. So that would be, yeah, so you'd have your two microphones, your two headphones, and your mixer, and you can always add on. It's always very easy to add on. So it'd be a good base to start off with. As I said, you have other options as well. You have like a Behringer US-202 or something like that. I forget the exact name of it, but you have an interface. You have this Focus Scarlett. I think for the price, it's kind of the maximum quality you can get, and it's very expandable. You know, you could go and get a high quality mixer with two microphones, maybe, but you know, with just two inputs or something like that, and you could go for higher end microphones or have more, or just get four microphones but a lesser quality. So I think that would be the best balance as well. There's a lot of them here I'm looking at that have kind of condenser mics and things like that, which mightn't be as suitable for that setup because of there might be background noise and things like that. So that might be more, it might be more suitable for the needs. And then when I go down the list, I go to the likes of the Rode Procaster 2. But when you're putting that into bundles, you're going over €1,000. So that would probably break the budget. So yeah, that's some ideas anyway to get you started. So, and best of luck with that, with the students and everything, and best of luck with your podcast. And we're always available here at the station if you need any tips or anything like that, or any help setting up. You can always give us a shout. So best of luck with that. So we're going to have a look at some of the latest in tech now and see some of the news out there. As you know, if you have any questions for the next show, you can call 069-66200 or text 087-166-9800 or email myself, patrick102fm@gmail.com, and I will get back to you in the next show as well. So Tesla Cybertruck mass production won't start until 2024. Cybertruck's full volume production will not be realized until 2024, reveals Elon Musk. So it keeps getting pushed out the Cybertruck. So their long anticipated Cybertruck won't see full volume production until 2024, Elon Musk said during the company's fourth quarter earnings call today. During the call, Musk said, was asked whether the forthcoming vehicle would meet a mid 2023 production target that was set in the second quarter of last year. Musk said that the Cybertruck manufacturing would start sometime this summer, but concluded that mass production of the polarizing pickup won't start until next year. I was always trying to downplay the start of production, Musk said. It increases exponentially, but it is very slow at first. Cybertruck was originally announced in 2019 to widespread interest, but has since seen its production delayed several times. Pre-production was originally supposed to start in late 2021, but was delayed as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, and it was slated for 2023, a projection made a year ago. The chip shortage as well had a big effect on it, and lots of other cars as well. So that's being delayed at the moment. Netflix's real life Squid Game show is slightly safer than the original. Well, it would want to be. Participants filming Squid Game The Challenge reportedly experienced medical issues due to freezing temperatures on set. Okay, at least they weren't being shot like the TV show. A handful of contestants for Netflix's in-development reality show Squid Game The Challenge needed medical attention on Monday after enduring freezing temperatures on set. The series is currently being filmed across two studios in the UK, where temperatures reportedly reach as low as 30 Fahrenheit or negative 1 Celsius on Monday while filming a game of red light, green light, and resulted in at least one contestant being stretchered off. A total of 456 global contestants have been cast for the reality spin-off to compete in various challenges inspired by the Netflix series in order to win $4.56 million or 3.7 million sterling. The red light, green light game, as featured in the original Squid Game series, requires participants to remain silent and motionless while under the watchful gaze. A giant robotic doll and only move when the doll's back is turned, lest they be terminated from the game. That's actually kind of what Mr. Beast did, the famous YouTuber. He did his own version of Squid Game. I think it's definitely his most viewed video. It's one of the most viewed videos ever on YouTube. And he set up a kind of a real life version of Squid Game. So, and kind of Netflix have gone off the back of that and done it themselves. Maybe they offered it to him, but he wasn't interested. So they've done their own version of it now as well. So even if hypothermia, and they have, I suppose they have the rights to do it since they created the show and things like that, or they financed the show. Even if hypothermia kicked in, people were willing to stay for as long as possible because a lot of money was on the line. Yeah, it is an awful lot of money. So yeah, that'll be interesting to see what it looks like when it comes out. GoldenEye 007 is coming to Nintendo Switch and Xbox on January 27th. So this is a very famous game. The James Bond GoldenEye 007, they're remastering it and bringing it out on Xbox and Switch. GoldenEye 007 is finally coming to Xbox and Nintendo Switch this week. Rare is releasing GoldenEye 007 HD on Xbox as a remaster of the legendary Nintendo 64 game that first launched in 1997. The game will be available on January the 27th for both Xbox and Nintendo Switch, with a remastered version of Xbox that includes 4K resolution, smoother frame rates, and even split-screen multiplayer. Online multiplayer modes will be exclusive to the Nintendo Switch version of the game, as Nintendo is using the original game. Microsoft has made a faithful recreation of GoldenEye 007 for the Xbox, but it will include a local multiplayer mode for split screen with friends. Xbox One and Xbox Series X and S will be able to access the GoldenEye 007 Xbox version. That's very good. That's a really classic game. Yeah, they have always talked about that for some reason as a great game. I don't know if I ever I still have a Nintendo 64, but I don't know. I might have had that game. I'm not 100% sure. All I remember is GT 64, the racing game, and people used to hate it, and I loved it. Microsoft is to invest billions in chatbot maker OpenAI. They make the ChatGPT software that everyone's gone crazy about at the moment using. It was actually shut down the other day. I went onto it to ask it a question about something or other, and it wasn't working. It said, "Oh, give us your email and we'll let you know when it's back up working again." But I don't know. I haven't tried it since now, so I don't know if it's back up working again or not. Microsoft has announced a multi-year, multi-billion-dollar investment in artificial intelligence as it extends its partnership with OpenAI. OpenAI is the creator of popular image generation tool DALL-E and the chatbot ChatGPT. In 2019, Microsoft invested $1 billion in the company founded by Elon Musk and tech investor Sam Altman. The Windows and Xbox maker plans up to 10,000 redundancies, but said it would still hire in key strategic areas. Breaking the news in a memo to staff last week, Chief Executive Satya Nadella said, "The next major wave of computing is being born with advances in AI." Announcing the extended partnership, the firm said it believed AI would have an impact impact at the magnitude of the personal computer, the internet, mobile devices and the cloud. It's becoming more and more integrated, you know, even your Alexa and your Google speakers and all these things, it's all AI. It's all artificial intelligence that kind of guesses what you're going to say. And, you know, it can do follow-up questions and all that. You know, what time is the movie on tonight? And it'll tell you, and once you say the cinema and give the details, but then, you know, who stars in that movie or something like that, and they tell you the actors, or, you know, even if you don't give the full question again, I know Google one is very good for that. And so it's really becoming more intelligent. And you see with ChatGPT, you know, if you ask them, oh, tell me about the where hurling comes from in Ireland or something, it'll give you a whole history, and it'll be very detailed, like it was written by a person, you know. Blue Skies, Microsoft said it was committed to building AI systems and products that are trustworthy and safe. It said it would use OpenAI's technology across their consumer and enterprise products. As well as ChatGPT, the firm also produces DALL-E, which generates images of in response to simple text instructions, and GitHub Copilot, a system which uses AI to help write computer code. Microsoft said its cloud computing platform Azure would continue to power OpenAI. Earlier reports have suggested that Microsoft was considering investing in an additional $10 billion in OpenAI, but the company's announcement did not put a figure on the scale of its investment. They're betting on that. That will be continue to be the big thing. US accuses Google of driving out ad rivals. The US Department of Justice, the DOJ, and 8 US states have filed a case against Google, alleging it took too much power over the online ad market. That's been said many times. I've heard it a good few times about Google that they, in the past, they were kind of pushing their own ads. Say if you search for a new phone or something, it pushed the Google Pixel to the top of the list or something like that. And I think they made some adjustments to that, but there's been lots of other things said that they tipped the scale when it comes to your searches and things like that, to stuff that maybe they're getting sponsored by, or it suits them or something like that. So the US Department of Justice is filing a case against them. Its anti-competitive actions have weakened, if not destroyed, competition in the ad tech industry, U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland said. Google accused the DOJ of doubling down on a flawed argument. The case attempted to pick winners and losers in a competitive industry, the firm said. Online advertisements account for the lion's share of Google's multi-billion-dollar revenue. Google is the market leader, but its slice of the U.S. total digital ad income has fallen from 36.7% in 2016 to 28.8% in 2022, according to market research firm Insider Intelligence. Mr. Garland alleges that Google's anti-competitive conduct extended into three key areas. It controls the technology used by nearly all major websites publishers to offer ad space for sale. It controls the leading tool used by advertisers to buy ad space, and it controls the largest ad exchange that matches publishers and advertisers. Well, it does kind of, yeah, it kind of covers every side of it. It's, yeah, they have a huge percentage of between, you know, I think the biggest search engine in the world is Google, and the second biggest is YouTube, and they're both Google, you know, they're both owned by the same company, so they do have a massive hold over the industry. As a result of Google's scheme, website creators earn less and advertisers pay more, said Mr. Garland. It meant that fewer publishers were able to offer content without subscriptions, paywalls, and other forms of monetization. Assistant Attorney General Jonathan Cantor alleges that the firm's actions over 15 years had the effect of driving out rivals, diminishing competition, inflating advertising costs, reducing website publishing revenues, stymieing innovation, and flattening out the public marketplace of ideas. They're kind of famous for that. It's been said many times, you know, they'll either start, say if a new company starts up, they'll either start doing that same product at a lower cost, or they'll buy the company and take over it or something like that. So that's happened many times. Microsoft says services have recovered after widespread outage. Microsoft services have recovered after tens of thousands of users reported its products, including Outlook and Teams, have stopped working. The company tweeted that its impacted services have recovered and remain stable. Down Detector, which tracks website outages, showed dwindling numbers of users reporting problems. Microsoft blamed the outage on a change it made to its Wide Awake wide area network, which has now been resolved. In a message to the BBC, Microsoft explicitly ruled out a cyber attack as a potential cause of the issue. So at least it's sorted out now. The Banshees of Inisherin's 9 Oscar nominations will only add to Achill Island's popularity, according to a local tourism representative. The film received 9 Oscar nominations, much to the delight of Achill Tourism. Rosemary from the organisation says the film's success has only increased on the island. Let's see what she had to say.
We see an increase in telephone calls. The first thing to mention is the Banshees. We were at a trade show recently, and again, it was the Banshees. It's put Achill and Inishmore up there.
Yeah, it's great to see. It's great to see that. There's some great acting performances, and you know, the island looks fantastic. You know, very kind of remote, and you know, but it's very beautiful there, and it's a nice getaway for people who want to kind of something to get away from the rat race of living in a city or something like that, or a hectic lifestyle to get away from everything. A trip to Achill Island or something like that, but. The movie, fantastic performances. Colin Farrell is up for Best Actor, and Barry Keoghan was fantastic in it. He's up for Best Supporting Actor. I hope he gets that, because he was very, very good. He was my favourite in it. Also, Brendan Gleeson was very good, and he's always very good. So it was fantastic all around, you know. And Colleen Keane as well is nominated for an Oscar, so I hope that does well as well. So Ireland is very well represented in this year's Oscars, and it's great to see. Adverts for crypto trading should be banned, according to the governor of the central bank. Gabriel McHulf told the Oireachtas Finance Committee earlier that those who invest money in the scheme should expect to lose it. He said, in particular, young people are being targeted. Charlie Weston is a personal finance editor with the Irish Independent. He says Mr. Markov has been concerned for some time.
He just doesn't like those assets at all. He's warned that there's no regulatory protections. If something goes wrong, you've no fallback here if the value collapses. He has been warning consistently about crypto. He says don't put money into something where you've no comeback, and don't put anything more than you can cope with the loss of.
Well, you know, I'm not a huge fan of crypto myself, but there is risks with any kind of different investments. You know, we saw with the 2008 financial crash, you know, there was no crypto involved there, and people lost so much money. You have the likes of Bernie Madoff and things like that, who, you know, took people's pensions and things like that, and... that was kind of a corrupt dealings. But the financial crash here and things like that... that these things can happen in traditional financial circles as well. But crypto is very... There's a lot of these pump and dump schemes going on. So people try to hype up a certain crypto, and they get people to try to buy them, and then they sell all at the same time. And the people who don't sell at the right time end up losing, you know, all their money. Their share value goes down to nothing. So it is risky. It's definitely risky, all right. But there are lots of risks in lots of different financial institutions. So, you should always be careful when it comes to that kind of thing. Meta has announced it will reinstate Donald Trump's Facebook and Instagram accounts in the coming weeks after a 2-year suspension. The former US president had been kicked off of all the platforms after the January 6 riots in the US Capitol. Despite already being allowed back on Twitter, Mr. Trump has preferred to use his own app, Truth Social, adding that suspending a president's account should never happen again. He's back on social media again. Lady Gaga says writing a track for Tom Cruise's Top Gun sequel was a deep and powerful experience. She wrote on Instagram that she's so grateful for the magic of music and cinema. Hold My Hand is competing for an Oscar for Best Original Song, but Rihanna's Lift Me Up from Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, also in the running. That film overall was very good. I can't remember the song now exactly, but I just remember One Republic's song. I don't worry about it right now. I don't know what's in it. Was it Worry Right Now or Worry About It Right Now or something like that? But it's a very good song from that film as well. That was a great film. That and Spider-Man No Way Home are probably my favourite films. Big Hollywood films of the last year. Adult Swim has officially cut ties with Rick and Morty co-creator Justin Roiland in the wake of the voice actor's 2 felony charges for domestic battery and false imprisonment by menace, violence, fraud or deceit. The channel says the show is still in production, but its reputation will have taken a severe hit as a result of the allegations. So, yeah, that's very bad. I didn't hear that news now until I just read it. That show has been very popular. I know my niece and nephew were mad about that show. They thought it was very funny. But I'd only ever seen maybe 1 or 2 episodes of it, but now it's the show could be in jeopardy because Justin Roiland was one of the main people involved, I think, as far as I know. So that'll be a big loss for that show, but only right in what if the allegations are true. That's big news for that show. A big part of Microsoft's strategy has been how it bundles the services it offers to businesses. That's great when everything is working, less so when there's an outage like we saw with Outlook and Teams. This is just a bit more about that. If you can't email your colleagues and you can't instant message them, what's left? WhatsApp, the outage brings a close to a rough week for Microsoft that included layoffs and declining sales. Tesla says it's investing billions in its Nevada operations, which it says will help expand its battery cell and semi-truck production. They're making like articulated trucks and things like that as well, which they say have fairly long miles. Is it 500 mile range or something like that? The new $3.6 billion round of investment comes in addition to the $6.2 billion dollars that Tesla has already invested in the Nevada Gigafactory. The electronic automaker reports its quarterly earnings result this afternoon, saying it earned $3.7 billion in net income on $24.3 billion in revenue. CNET found errors in more than half of its written AI stories. The tech news site came under scrutiny this month after it was reported that the outlet was using AI to write articles. Last week, executives said the use of the AI tool would be paused for now. So they were using it to write articles. But yeah, no, I've tried it a few times. Like I don't think anything it wrote for me would be fully usable. I'd have to edit it heavily and kind of change it around because it does make a lot of mistakes and things like that. But it is remarkably close. It is remarkably good. Like Rad Power Bike's new CEO acknowledges mistakes, vows renewed focus on safety. Phil Mulno, a former executive at Dyson and Sony, took over from Mike Rattlesbrough last year after a major recall. In an email to customers, Mulno said that the e-bike company will have a laser focus on safety and reliability. So there must have been some problems with that. Twitch is going to make pre-roll ads way less annoying. Twitch is also adding a bunch of features for streamers and sharing what it's working on for creators in 2023 and beyond. They're making some changes there. The Verge gives some of its desktop accessories recommendations. So let's see what it has. A pen holder, that's always handy. This is a nice wooden pen holder. Amazon Echo Spot. I haven't seen this one. Now it's a rounded one with a little screen on the front, so it's a speaker. I presume it's a speaker, but it has a little analog clock on it, so it'd be handy to have on the desk. Don't laugh, it's still the OG Amazon Echo Spot from 2017. I haven't seen it in a while, probably, or I forgot about it. It has a cute and friendly clock face, but it doesn't take up nearly as much space as some other smart alarm clocks do. It cycles between showing me the weather, the time and the news, which is really the only thing I need the clock on my desk to be displaying. It plays my music library if I need a quick pick-me-up and I need something from Alexa. It's at my beck and call. I'm sure the comments section will point out that there's actually such There is actually such and such other alarm clock, yeah. I could be using instead of that, that has the same benefits, but I like my Echo Spot. It is kind of nice. It's cute looking, right? But yeah, there is lots of different options out there for that kind of thing. The Google, the show and the Google ones, and there's lots of different ones. There's also clocks that are speakers that just have a kind of a small screen for if you just want the time as well. So, an SAD lamp. Like many people, I struggled to get through dark winter months in my home office. My in-laws gifted me a full spectrum light for my desk, designed to mimic sunlight and to help with seasonal affective disorder. So it's made to make it kind of feign sunlight. Lamps are not FDA regulated. I can't swear to its actual medical benefits, but a surprise bonus is that my SAD lamp makes for incredibly flattering Zoom lighting, like being bathed in an influencer ring light. So yeah, there. That's a what is it? SAD lamp. I haven't heard of those before. Verilux Happy Light Touch Plus Therapy Lamp. So this person likes their lamps. This is $50 light therapy lamp that delivers up to 10,000 lux with three brightness. I heard lumens, but maybe that's just short for it. With brightness levels, two color temperature options and a convenient countdown timer. So that's another light if you need more light in your office. Also, actually, speaking of clocks earlier, I got a handy little clock in, I'm not sure, Lidl or Aldi or one of those shops with It flips up and it has a nice clear display for the time and the date, and it has actually has a temperature as well, the outside temperature, but it also has a wireless charging pad on the bottom part of it. So it flips open like a tiny laptop, and you just lay your phone on it to recharge your phone if you have a wireless charging phone, and it also has the time and date and all that kind of stuff. So that's a handy little one. Now actually, it has also a USB output out of it as well. So if you don't have wireless charging, you can plug a USB out of it and plug in it's a little white clock thing, but there's lots of different options of those as well. If you look up, you know, wireless charging pad clock or something like that, there's loads of different options. Wooden etched tweet. A meatball is a fruit. So this is just a funny little board that you can get with a, it looks like a tweet written on it, but you can get maybe your name or something like that on it if you wanted like a name board or something like that. It's a favorite. Their favorite desk accessory is my wooden tweet. I choose to get mine in honor of what I consider the best tweet of all time. Post Malone's legendary "Is meatball a fruit?" From 2018. It's a fun conversation starter, but it also reminds me of the Verge's audience manager, who only takes social media so seriously. So you can get a wooden etched tweet. It costs £50. Anchor under desk headphone hanger. Actually, I kind of would recommend something like this. I got a One Audio headphones a while back, and it came with a stand. Now, it's not an under-desk one, but it's one that stands on top, and you can hang your headphones on it. And I do find it handy. I don't know why. Like, it's just, it takes up less space, and I kind of have it at the side, so it gets the headphones out of the way. And it keeps them nice and secure. So headphone stands sounds like a bit of a gimmick, but they actually do help. They are actually handy. So what else? Anchor Pro under desk headphone hanger. So this is $16 for this one. It actually has a kind of a holder for the cable as well. So if you want to have it attached directly on there, an under desk dual headphone hanger that uses 3M adhesive for mounting, and that includes Velcro strap to anchor the headphone cable. So it might be, it depends on your situation. So Google Nest Hub is, yeah, the one that was in with the list earlier. They're very handy as well, and they can show you videos and give you recipes and show you lots of different things. And depends on where you're using it. The retro kitchen timer. So it's a little timer. It's very classic looking. It looks like the rear view mirror of like a 1950s Cadillac or something like that. It has that kind of mint green color and a chrome front on it, and it has a retro looking clock on it, with a timer on it instead of a clock or something like that. So yeah, that's very nice looking. The retro kitchen timer. Analog kitchen timer. So it's the actual brand is the KIKKER Kickerland Vintage Streamline Kitchen Timer. It's $19. It goes up to 55 minutes. So, but it looks really cool. The Belkin Boost Charge 3-in-1 wireless charger. So that's kind of what I was talking about earlier. Is a wireless charger. You have to get one that suits your phone. Some of them have the magnet chargers that are built for iPhones, and they mightn't work on Android phones. Some will have more universal kind of ones. There's QI charge, and different voltages as well depends on your phone, or different wattages. And there's ones that can attach watches as well and can recharge headphones are built, well, headphones as well nowadays, some of them, and are built-in earphones as well. So there's lots of different ones there. That's the Belkin Boost Charge. It's €100, 3-in-1. A desk mat is very handy for a mouse mat as well. I got a huge one that kind of covers most of the desk, so it kind of covers everything, and it looks nice as well. You can get different designs on them and things like that as well. So a good mouse mat or a good desk mat. This one is the Black Cat Large Gaming Mouse Pad for £26. And that's about it. That's some of the desk accessories, and it's perfect timing. This is our show for today. As always, you can call 069-66200 or text or WhatsApp 087-166-9800, and email myself, patrick102fm@gmail.com. And that's been our show for today. Thank you for listening. I'll be with you again next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Tech Thursday on West Limerick 102 FM.